Was this live streamed? Oh my goodness, no one told me that. I like that. Are we on? I'm on. I thought I had an hour and 15 minutes, but I have an hour and I have so much unbelievably amazing content that if you saw what I did yesterday and the 5 or 6 minutes I had on stage, I think you're gonna be blown away today. So I don't wanna waste a moment at all. And I lost my pointer. Where'd it go? There it is. Whew, a presenter without a clicker, gone forever. All right, I'm not gonna move that much, channel 9. I'm just gonna stay right here, that way we don't have to pace, rest assured. Awesome, I'm so excited. How many of you are brand new to kind of Xamarin or kind of tinkering around with Xamarin a little bit? A lot of you, awesome. So you're in the right place. I unbelievably, without a doubt, love cross-platform mobile development with Xamarin. I started as a customer of Xamarin almost 7 years ago at a very small startup building all of their mobile applications. And I didn't even know what I was doing when it came to Android or iOS, because I wasn't a Java developer, I wasn't an Objective-C developer, I was a C# developer. I was building Windows Phone applications, because Microsoft gave me a Windows Phone, and I saw the power of a mobile device in my hand, and I could build apps for it. And when I found Xamarin and saw that I could take the same knowledge and language that I loved for years upon years and build any single application on any device, I fell in love overnight. I loved it so much that I joined the company and I came along for the ride here at Microsoft. So this is something I'm truly passionate about and I'm super excited to share it all with you today. So again, I don't want to waste a minute at all, except that I just wasted a minute telling you that awesome story. So that's me, I'm James Montemagno. I work here at Microsoft, I live here, I drink that, and I build these awesome things. That's my short version of it. You can find me anytime at mots@microsoft.com. That's a direct line right to me. Mots Codes is my blog, and you can find me at James Montemagno. That's also my GitHub account where all of the source code that you find today will live. If you enjoy listening to the smooth, smooth voice of James Montemagno, you can find me each and every week on a podcast I do called Merge Conflict. We just released a new episode today on how we built and shipped the Xamarin Live Player that I demoed yesterday. So check that out. I also have a show here on Channel 9. So if you go to Channel 9 at all, you can go to xamarinshow.com. It's a redirect to take you directly to the Xamarin Show on Channel 9. And it's a show about Xamarin. I do it every week. I was real original with the title. Straight and to the point. So if you're looking for some more good Xamarin content, head there. Bookmark these things. Enough about me. When I got started nearly 7 years ago, my boss came into my office and he said, James, we're going to CES in just 2 months and we need a native iOS, Android, and Windows Phone app. And I told you, I didn't know very much about Java or Objective-C. Java, I could like lowercase things and I guess I could be all right like figuring that out. But Objective-C and Java, Objective-C I didn't know. There were stars and brackets. I didn't know anything about the iPhone. But I said, if I'm gonna start building these applications, if I'm gonna deliver mobile apps in just 2 months, I'm gonna need some cross-platform framework. But before I even got started on that, it stuck out in my mind that he said native. He goes, I need native beautiful apps. And I said, well, what does that mean? Because that looking around, what I found is all these web technologies and browser-based things. And how could those things be native? So I boil it down into three important things that I think we want as developers for ourselves, but also what we want to do to deliver great experience to our end users that make a great native app. We want a great native user interface. You know, there's a reason someone bought an iOS or Android device. It's because they like the hardware, but they also love the software. So we want to give them a rich user interface based on their platform. We also want to give them access to every single API. As developers, we want that. If there's something that we can do on the device, we should be able to do it. So we can really access those native APIs to distinguish our apps in the App Store. And of course, the final part is that we want it to be super great native performance. You click a button, it just does it. It starts really fast. So you want to have access to do all of these. So like, James, of course, that's exactly what I want to do. So how do I do it? How do I build these applications? And I'm glad that everybody asked. Well, you could do what I thought I was going to do. Build an app 3 times in 3 languages and 3 IDEs. Boot up Xcode on a Mac. I never used a Mac. So I figured, I mean, it looks bubbly like Windows XP, so I could figure it out, you know, and then I'll be, you know, come on and do some Android Studio. It was Eclipse back in the day for an Android app. Then I'd be happy in Visual Studio with my Windows app. Now, the problem here is that I'm building that app 3 times in 3 languages. When I go and talk to developers and are doing the silo approach, they literally have 3 teams in 3 separate rooms building 3 separate apps. Like, how can you work together to not only just write the core common logic, build the user interface, do the unit testing, do the integration testing? It gets real expensive real fast to ship these applications. It's just not manageable. So then you're like, all right, well, I'm going to just find some cross-platform, write once, and be everywhere-ish. and not great. So we kind of call this that write once, run anywhere approach, which was early cross-platform development is what developers thought this is all they had available, which is a bunch of HTML or JavaScript that you shoved into an app generator and plop, apps came out at the end of the day. It's kind of like what my parents think I do for a living, like jam on a keyboard and then apps. Like that's what app development is, just apps. That's the best way I can describe what software development is. I just go like this. This is the description of development. Like you just do this and apps. Wow, seemed to work for me. So this thing here is interesting because it gives you a cross-platform app, but not necessarily a great cross-platform app everywhere, nor do you really get access to every single API. These apps are usually running in a web browser, but you know, if JavaScript, you know, there's a framework a day, so you gotta figure it out. So what happens here is that you're always kind of developing against their API, not the API of the platform. So you get this high-level abstraction, but then if you wanna go down into the APIs, you gotta go write the native code anywhere. You're not really getting a great native performance, because again, they're usually running in a web browser. So this is where Xamarin is different when it comes to cross-platform mobile development. We said we love everything about native. We love everything about sharing code, but gosh darn it, we love C# and we love .NET. So let's just put that everywhere. And that's what we did. We enable you to build a shared C# business logic layer, your models, view models, RESTful service calls, SQL databases, Azure integrations. Things are the same across every single one of your mobile applications, and share all of that. And then we give you the tools to build out a beautiful native user interface across iOS, Android, Mac, tvOS, watchOS, Android Wear, and any of the Windows platforms, everywhere, .NET code everywhere, as it should always be. That's what we do. We have two ways of building the user interfaces. I'm gonna demo both of them today in the very short time that I have. First is that shared business logic, but building out native user interfaces for each, all in Visual Studio. So an iOS storyboard, Android XML files, and XAML for my Windows applications. Now this is great when you need a super high fidelity application, access to every single UI element. Those Azure apps that you saw Scott Guthrie demo yesterday, built with Xamarin Native, sharing 70% of code across all three platforms. Because they have all those charts and graphs and you want that optimal performance. When you want your app to open in sub 1 or 2 seconds, that's where Xamarin Native comes in, giving you 1-to-1. But how many of you are building apps for internal enterprise? I know I was. I worked for Canon for many years building internal apps. We said, we love everything about this, but wouldn't it be great if you could write one user interface and still be native everywhere, share even more code? That's where our Xamarin Forms cross-platform user interface library comes in. It enables you to still share all that business logic, but as an abstraction over common UI controls for iOS, Android, and UWP. So what's great about this is that you get access to it with one XAML markup, and then you get native apps across all of them. But it is an abstraction, right? And it's a bigger library. So it's not great for every single application. But you can see like the Evolve Conference app that I built personally is up there, the Iowa Caucus apps, and even Coca-Cola Distribution uses it, and they just only just ship an iPad app. They're like, all we need is iPad, but we love XAML. So we're gonna use Xamarin Forms to do that. So those are the two approaches. I'm gonna first start with Xamarin Native, but I'm gonna talk a little bit how Xamarin actually works. So then if someone asks you tomorrow when you, or the next day when you go back to the office, what is a Xamagon thingy, this Xamarin thing, what is that thing all about? You can tell them exactly how it works. Well, first you can tell them that, well, we already have access to it because it's included in Visual Studio, bonus, including Community Edition. Don't have to pay us a dime for anything. Awesome. You use it in Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac. Those are your IDEs. So if you're on a PC, boom, Visual Studio. If you're on a Mac, Visual Studio. It made my life easier when we have Visual Studio, Visual Studio. You're just gonna use Visual Studio. It's great. And there you go. So that's your IDEs, and it's already integrated, and it's a workload that you tap and install. No matter if you're using Community, Professional, or Enterprise. Everything's open source, so you can go and tell them that, which is great. We open source everything, including our .NET runtime, and all of our libraries. So how the heck does this thing work before I go and show you a bunch of awesome code? Well, think of it for me. I was a Windows developer forever and still am, and I found this thing called .NET, and it changed my life, because once I found C# and I found .NET, and I could just go to an IDE and hit dot, and there was all this stuff I could do, I was like, well, why do anything ever again? Because there's all the stuff, like we already wrote all the code for me. And I found this thing, and .NET Forever was restricted to Windows, and it's getting more open with .NET Core to go to other other platforms. But I think of this as this awesome big library that I should be able to take anywhere. And when I want to target a specific platform and integrate deeply into the user interface or the APIs of that platform, I download an SDK and I get some namespaces associated with that platform. Think of exactly the same with Xamarin for iOS and Android. We give you all of that .NET goodness on the bottom that you can share across any platform. And then we create C# bindings around every single API for iOS and Android. So like iBeacon, UIKit, MapKit. So you have access to everything all in C#. You never have to write Objective-C, Swift, or Java. Everything in C#. And these bindings are super powerful, and I'm going to show you that in code, as we add C# features like async await, lambdas, events, delegates. So even though I'm accessing a native API for iOS, I'm doing it all in C# with all of our super powerful C# features. So you're going to feel real comfortable. Same thing on Android. All that .NET goodness, but Android on top, including Google Play services, Android support libraries, everything. Now, to get that native performance, we do some awesome things. On iOS, we do a full ahead-of-time compilation, AOT. What we do is we take your C#, compile it down into IL, an intermediate language, and one more time into LLVM bytecode, and we send those puppies right through an LLVM compiler and optimizer that essentially produces a native ARM binary that will be uploaded to the App Store. And to your users, there's no difference. They just went to the App Store and installed it. You probably have Xamarin apps on your phone, and you have no idea. If you installed that Azure app, it's a Xamarin app. On Android, we can leverage just-in-time compilation, because Android's awesome and crazy. It's my favorite platform. And we can run our .NET runtime side-by-side the Art or Dalvik runtime on Android, and we can JNI across to make the native calls. But again, there's no difference. It's just a great native performance that's going to work out of the box. We have same day support, amazing support for not only just the latest versions of iOS and Android. We have an Android O preview coming out extremely soon. On iOS, we've been able to follow along with the dev preview. So you get long dev previews before the GA release. And then as soon as it's GA, boom, you have a build that you can ship your apps to the App Store. We support everything else, though, not just phones and tablets. If you're building Apple Watch applications, Apple TV, Android Wear, Amazon Fire, devices, and even Google Glass, we supported that. So if there's a device that is in the Apple or Google ecosystem, you're there. And then everything that we do here at Microsoft, whether it's Windows, HoloLens, all of your .NET code goes there as well, right? So it's not just iOS and Android, it's everything else that we're doing. So truly anything that you can do in Objective-C, Swift, or Java, you can do it in C# inside of Visual Studio. So let's actually write some code. Whew. All right. So I'm over here inside of Visual Studio, and normally what you do is kind of what I showed you yesterday. File new project, you've installed the Xamarin workload, and what you get when you come in here is all of your UWP apps, you have Android apps, over here you have iOS apps. I'm going to zoom in here, here we go. And notice these are like Android Wear, Single View, I have Apple Watch apps, extensions, Apple apps for iOS. Are like all built on extensions like custom keyboards and audio drivers. We give you rich templates right there. We even have tvOS inside of here too. So no matter where you're kind of getting started, those are those high fidelity applications where you're like, I'm just going to get started and start building out this code. Then we have these cross-platform templates that I kind of showed off yesterday when I demoed the live player. So I get a cross-platform app and I can choose between Xamarin Forms or Xamarin Native. So I started here with this native app, and I'm going to show Xamarin Native first. So this is an app that I like to demo a lot because it's straight and to the point and shows off some really cool UI and how you build out iOS and Android. I call it Image Search, where I search for some images, obviously. And it's nice because inside of here, I have Android, iOS, and I have this shared project. And I'm going to talk about code sharing strategies in a little bit. But what we have inside of here is our models. We have services and our view models. So my model here is my image search. So I have some very simple things like thumbnail, image link, file format, title, context link, and that's what I want to surface to iOS or Android. I have some Bing image search APIs, so I have some search results in here, and it's just a bunch of JSON. I'm using Bing search APIs inside of Cognitive Services, and I can get a list of images that'll be represented there. I have a bunch of other stuff that I'll show in a bit too, which is pretty fun. But the core of this application is this view model. I'm an MVVM type of developer. I just love it. I fell in love with the pattern. So even though iOS and Android are more MVC type architectures, I still architect everything in an MVVM way. So I have an observable collection of images that I knew up. And I have a method here called search for images async. I'm gonna go ahead and remove some of this code. There we go. So at this point, I have this cognitive service API that I pass in a string query. I have a header key here, and I'm just gonna start writing some just .NET code, right, inside my shared project. So I'm gonna create a new client, new HTTP client. I'm gonna say client.headers.add. There we go. So I'm gonna add this header key and the header value, which is my API key, that needs to be passed along. So now what I need to do is I just need to make an HTTP request, and I'm just gonna use my standard HTTP client, which is gonna go down the native stacks for me in iOS and Android. But I'm just developing against a common HTTP client in SystemNet HTTP. So I'm gonna say var, let's go grab some JSON, and I'll say client.getStringAsync. And of course, I want to await that. There we go. So things are gonna come in on the UI thread, a task is gonna be fired off, I'm gonna go ahead and get that back, and there we go. Cool. So now what I need to do is I need to deserialize it. So I've brought in JSON.NET, everyone's favorite JSON deserializer and serializer, so I'm gonna go ahead and get some results here. And I'll say JSON convert. So I'm just added a standard NuGet package. So Xamarin Apps, pull in all your NuGets, right? Dot deserialize object, and this is gonna be a search result. And I'm just gonna pass it the JSON. And yes, this is how I code at home, zoomed in extremely at a where's that, 170%. That's the ideal percentage for code development. All right, cool, so I have my results, but this thing was the search result thing, which is really ugly JSON, and I wanna convert it into my own images here. So I'm gonna say var, images, I'm gonna say result.images.select. And for each image, we're gonna select a new image result. So I'm just gonna use some standard link, right, to convert everything inside of here into my image result list here. So inside here, I'm gonna say context link is a URL. I'm gonna have a file format. Let's see, format, there we go. Image link will be i.URL, that is the content URL. This should be the URL, host page URL. Then I have a thumbnail link, which I know sometimes is null. So I'm gonna say i.content URL. And finally, title will be i.name. There we go. So just standard, just kind of working with web requests and pulling it back. And the last thing I wanna do is update that list. So I have a list of images. I'm gonna say replace range, and I'm gonna say images. Pass in my IEnumerable that is returned. Cool. So it'll clear out the list and then update the range. And if anything goes wrong, like every good developer, I try catch do absolutely nothing. All right, let's at least add a breakpoint. There we go. All right, so now you're saying, all right, James, I have some .NET code, I understand this, I got some models, I got some view models. And this app is just a single page, so it's kind of easy right now, but you can imagine I'm adding more view models. I have hundreds of view models and so many pages of stuff. But all of that is shared. So all my integrations into my web requests, my models, my view models, everything is shared. So now what we're gonna do is build out a little bit of native user interface for Android and iOS. So here's my image search.android. And inside of here I have some references. So I have my shared code, I have tons of NuGets, because all the NuGets, all the time, so many NuGets. That's what I do. I literally go into NuGet, I just type in my name, and I just install all my NuGets. That's how you do it. That's how every good Xamarin app is made. And I have all these support libraries. So I have Android libraries, I have system libraries, I'm blending the world of Android libraries and .NET libraries. So that's all inside of there. But this is my shared code that I have. So what I want to do is show you the structure. This is a native Android application written in C#. So I have all my drawables, like these icons that are inside of here, and images. And layouts are really important. These are the Android XML layouts for my user interface. I have menus, I have values when I'm doing string translations or styles, file paths when I take photos. I'm integrating deeply because we go through the same compilation steps to pump out a native application. So if you read different documentation, you'll feel right at home whether you're reading on the Xamarin Docs or the Google Docs for resources. And in fact, these are the same resources that would be in Android Studio, so you can just copy and paste from Android Studio right into Visual Studio. So this user interface, let's go ahead and pull out my toolbox. I'm gonna go ahead and pin this over here. There we go. So this is loading up, and this is loading our Android Designer for Visual Studio. And what I have over on the right-hand side, while that spins up, is essentially all the different widgets that are in Android. So radio groups, spinners, switches, text box, pointers, text fields, media, like anything that's inside of there. And these are Android-specific widgets. So I built out the user interface a little bit ahead of time. But what it essentially looks like is a way for me to search for cute things. I have a button here that's a search. And I have a recycler view, which is a super highly optimized list view in the world of Android. But notice up here that we integrate, and we can say, let me look on a Nexus 4, different versions of Android, different themes. Here I can rotate it back and forth and see what it looks like as it's adaptive. We have this theme editor, where you can come in and pick all of your material palette designs. It'll generate all of your app's theme for you automatically right inside of here. So if you don't like what it is, it'll generate one for you automatically. We have grids, we have all sorts of things to help you be productive when you're building this out. Now, I built this out ahead of time, but what I did here is just drug out a bunch of controls onto the page, and what it did in the code behind is it created this Android XML, and this is the same Android XML that's standard across any Android application, and the designer is just visualizing it here. So I have a relative layout, and inside of it, I include a toolbar. I have a linear layout where I'm putting some material design user interface controls. I have a progress bar to do a little spinner that's hidden right now. You can see the visibility is gone. And you know it's Android XML because it says Android, 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 Android everywhere. They really made it clear. And it's not XAML, it's Android XML, all right? It does look like XAML. And in fact, I was a XAML developer, and I did Silverlight, Dove PF, Windows Phone. I fell in love with it. So I felt real comfortable writing Android XML. Just a little bit different syntax. So this is it, and what's important here is that I can interact and grab these controls. Each control has an ID associated with it, and that's how I will query to go find that control later on. So think of it like an X name, but not an X name at all. It is an ID, but it doesn't create anything in the code behind because there is no generated code behind in the world of Android. You associate an Android XML with an activity, and you make the association. In the world of Android, things are very decoupled. I don't like to say fragmented, even though they are fragmented, but decoupled in a way, and you get to put them together. That means that you can reuse this Android XML on a bunch of different screens and compose it easily. So this code behind has a main activity, and here it is. I integrate from app compat, so I get nice material design on all versions of Android. This is an activity, so I have an activity attribute, so we actually improve the API of Android, so you don't have to go into this thing called an Android manifest at all. We generate everything for you. And here's what I'm doing, is the first thing I do is I bring in my shared code. So almost every single thing that I'm going to do here is going to essentially respond to a handler, respond to some text entry, and then call into my shared code. I want to get out of this file as soon as humanly possible. I only want to generate a little bit of code. So the first thing I do is I inflate that user interface. I say, hey, resource layout main, which is the same thing that was in my resources, inflate that. Now I can go ahead and grab the toolbar. I'm going to create a new view model here. And this is how I query for all of my different resources and controls. So I have a progress bar, edit text, and a button. So now what I can do is I can come inside of here and I can say button.click, and I'll say plus equals. And I'm just going to go ahead and create a lambda in here, there we go, to create a click handler. So there's nothing to override, there's nothing to implement any runnable, anything like that. I'm just adding an async handler right in line. That's super simple. So now what I can do is I can just start interacting. This is an Android widget, so we improve the APIs of Java, obviously, here. So if I say enabled, and I can say, well, let's disable it, button.enabled. Not true. I was at Google I.O. Last week, and they got very excited because Kotlin was coming over there. And they're like, look at these auto properties. I was like, oh, man, I was introduced to those 10 years ago. They're like, whoa, mind-blowing. Kotlin is cool, but C-sharp still better. Don't get me wrong. I love language, love all languages, but I really love C-sharp. It's just so good. So what I'm going to do in here is I'm going to say progress bar, and I'm going to say visibility. And over there, we've just mapped the integers directly to an enum. So I'm going to say, let's make that visible. And now, when I'm done, let's go ahead and make it gone again. So a little spinner there. Now all I need to do is just await. And literally, I'm just writing about 5 or 6 lines of code. Again, I immediately want to get into my shared code. So I'm going to say viewModel.searchForImagesAsync. I'm going to pass it the query.text. There we go. Now that's just a string that is returned. So if I wanted to, I could trim it. If I, you know, do any of your string manipulation, anything that you're used to in the world there. And that's it. And you can see I'm having access to a bunch of system namespaces. There's system, Android, my shared code here, everything that's coming in. Now I have a little bit of code down here to say set up main view, but it's pretty simple. Essentially, for each of those items that I want to display in the list, I want to display in a grid. And this thing's called recycler views, gives you a grid layout out of the box. So I don't want to hide anything from you. So essentially, I set this up and I create this little recycler view. And just like I created a little bit of user interface for the main view, I wanted to create a little bit of a user interface for each item. So I have some events, some click handlers that I can add. And what's happening here is every time I request a collection change or I get a collection change, I just update the list of items. So just an event. And all I do here is very similar to what I did previously. I inflate this item layout that I have, which is a nice little card view. And then down here, I set the title. And I use Picasso, which is a library from Square, to actually download the image and cache it for me automatically. It's just one line of code with a builder. And that's it. And I can use all my fancy C# 6 features and all that jazz inside of here. So nothing crazy. So now I'm getting ready. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and build this up. Build it up. I'm like ready to go. How do I get it either onto an emulator or get it onto a device? So what happens here is I hit compile, and it's built it all up, and it just builds everything here on my Surface Book. So what we do is we integrate deeply into your common debug spots, right? So here we have a bunch of Visual Studio emulators. There's ARM-based ones, which are extremely slow, and then there's x86 ones, which are extremely fast, that run on Intel Hexum virtualization software. But I'm going to put it on a single device here. So I've plugged in my Nexus 6, and I'm going to go ahead and hit debug on here. And now what it'll do is it'll essentially finish up the compiling, packaging, and put it on my device. So here's what we can do is I'm just going to go ahead and add a few breakpoints inside of here so we can kind of see what's going on. And I'm going to use an application called Visor that lets me screen mirror. So you can see it's actually doing it. It's a real device. And it's just plugged in via USB. So when I plug in a device under USB and I put it in developer mode, it will then deploy it on it. So let's go ahead and start this debug. And it'll launch and it'll deploy onto my device. So there we go. So there we go. We get some nice material theming going on here. We saw that little search for cute things moves up because I'm using that support design library. And we'll say cute monkey and hit search. So now what'll happen is it's gone off. It's going to make a request. I'm going to hit a breakpoint. So my app's frozen. I'm actually hit a breakpoint here. I have some JSON that came back. I have my watch window, my call stack, everything that you would suspect inside of here. So if I pop up that, here's that JSON. That's why it's real nasty. It's like super long. And if you're like, James, how did you get all that stuff? Well, you know I went to JSON2C#.com, and I pasted all that JSON in there, and then I hit generate, and then it gave me all my classes. We've all done that, right? Yeah. It's pretty cool. All right, so then I can continue on. I'm going to deserialize those results. There we go. I'm going to convert them with link. I have a bunch of images that are inside of here in this IEnumerable. It's somewhere in there, and then we can continue on. So all your normal stuff happens, and then we get some cute, adorable monkeys right there. And we can scroll through. And you can see I'm just scrolling. I'm getting super great performance. All the images are download cached and everything for me automatically, right? I can just scroll around all day, and I get these cute, adorable monkeys. So cute. Look at that one eating a banana. That was like me this morning. Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. This is just me. This is why I demo, is to look at cute, adorable monkeys. If you don't like monkeys, which shame on you, we all love pandas. So we can also, with this application, of course, search for pandas. You can search for anything you want, and there are some cute, adorable pandas. So flippin' cute. All right. So what's important here is I'm getting great native user interface, material design, app compat, everything here, but I'm sharing a bulk of my logic. The actual code for Android is very minimal. If I go into that actual main activity, I just found a little bit of user interface, added a click handler, used standard C# goodness to build it out, and then go off and share into my shared code here. So this application is already sharing like 60 or 70% of code just from that single screen. But I'm getting super high fidelity applications here. So in the world of iOS, though, we're going to start building out this again for iOS, because with the Xamarin Native approach, I'm going to take advantage of every single thing in iOS or Android. So I'm going to set that as my startup. And inside of iOS, I have all the same NuGets, all my same shared code, but I have Xamarin iOS. I had Xamarin Android for Android, Xamarin iOS for iOS, which gives me all my iOS stuff. So we have some resources like artwork for the store, launch screen. I'm going to go ahead and double tap on this main storyboard. iOS describes its user interface in a thing called a storyboard. You can have one or many. It's like a complete overview of your application, and it also has code behind associated with it. So I'm going to go ahead and just zoom back out and pull out my toolbox here. So what this is doing right now is it's going to go and it's going to talk to my, talk to my Mac, which apparently is disconnected from. So let's see if we can connect here. So whenever I want to do UI design or I want to deploy to an emulator or something like that, I have to be connected to a Mac. So over here I have my MacBook Adorable right here. It's in rose gold, everyone's favorite color that everyone should own. It's my favorite. And what essentially is doing here is it's making a secure connection to a Mac on the network, and it's booted up our storyboard designer. So there we go. Pretty fast. Once it connected, it's good to go. That just has to be a Mac that has an IP somewhere. It could be a local Mac on your network or a third-party provider like Mac in Cloud or Mac Stadium that hosts Macs in the cloud for you. And you're saying, James, well, you just showed me that Xamarin Live Player thing. And like, why aren't you doing stuff like that? Well, when I start to build out a complex user interface and I want the storyboard designer and I want all this stuff, I need to have that full power. We're running the application, the full user interface here. So Xamarin Live Player, like I showed yesterday, kind of good to get up and running, but when you start going, you'll obviously always want a Mac because it's part of the Apple EULA that you actually build and compile apps on a Mac. So here's a very similar user interface, except for I have a navigation controller, I have an image search, and I'm building this user interface in a generic way. So if it is on an iPhone or on an iPad, the constraint system will automatically, dynamically do everything for me. But just like I had for Android, I have all the iOS stuff here. So if I needed a new label, I could drag it out, and I get all the controls and things like that in there. I can add data views. I can add windows and buttons and toolbars, everything inside of here. So I have a few items in here, and you can see the constraint system. I have some progress bars, some search things in here. I can pull up my property grid here and pin it. I don't know why it's there. Let's go and put it down here. There we go. So as I tap around in here, I have this cute monkey that's our default. You can see up here when I go to the button that it actually says button search. You can name the actual elements that are on here. And I even have a collection view here that allow me to actually have different items inside of here that I've designed. So this view has some code behind it. It has a class down here called view controller. So if I close down the storyboard and open up the view controller, it's very similar to an Android activity. So essentially what I have is a UI view controller, which is kind of like an activity. I'm also saying that I am the data source. So just like Android had an adapter, an iOS app has a data source to tell it how to display each item. So the first thing I do is I have an image search view model from my shared code. I'm going to say, hey, collection view, I am the data source. So all I need to do now is just say button search. You would think dot click. Nope, incorrect, because Apple named it touch up inside. So we don't You can touch up outside, touch up inside, touch down. You have like 1,000 click events, but this is the one you want. And in fact, if I just double tapped on that button, it would have generated the code for me automatically. We actually do that for you, which is nice. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to do it manually, though. It's going to be very similar code. So again, we just essentially create your touch up inside event. And I can say button search.enabled. But now I'm interacting with iOS specific stuff. So I can say false, right? And I can say button search enabled equals true. All right, and then I can say activity indicator, that little loading thing. I can say start animating. So you can see the iOS APIs are a little bit different because it's iOS, but I'm still interacting in a C# way. So of course I want to do a few more things. I'm going to say await, and now my view model, Visual Studio is happy with me. I'm going to search for images async. And I'm going to say text field query dot text. It's over there. There we go. And get it. Now, in this instance, I'm just going to tell the collection view to reload data whenever it's done. Now, what's cool here is that I just have a few lines of code, but I want to show you how we are actually improving the APIs of iOS and Android more. than just these little events and adding async await, which is cool. But we actually do it on a core level of iOS and Android native APIs. So for instance, if I go UI view dot, there are a few things in here. We have animate, animate key frames, animate notify to do native UI animations. But you can see that we have animate, which here, which takes in a two actions, a duration, animation, and a completion. So essentially a callback when it's done. But we said, hey, if there's a completion block and a callback, what if we just create an async version of it? You just give us the duration and animation, and you can await on that. So why not? So we'll say over 0.5 seconds, let's give it an action to animate, and we'll say collection view.alpha equals 0. And we'll await on it, so it's happy. There we go. And then when it's done, and after we reload our items, let's go ahead and fade it back in. There we go. We'll fade it back up to 1. So what this animate does is it takes a look at the current alpha, and over that time, it'll interpolate that down to 0. The same thing back up. So now what's great here is I've set iOS as the startup. And inside of our toolbar up here, I have iPhone or iPhone Simulator. And when I toggle it to iPhone Simulator, since I'm connected to my Mac, I'm able to go and find all of the simulators, any single simulator or device that's plugged into my Mac that I can deploy on into a full debug session. This is going to run my app with all my info plist, my entitlements. So if I need to do push notifications, if I need to test rich, complex, deep integrations, I can do that there. So let me go ahead and just go ahead and I'm going to clean and rebuild since I've changed networks 1,000 times. And I'm going to go ahead and rebuild it. And when I'm rebuilding it, it's compiling up my C# code and a bulk of my executable right here on my actual Surface Book. So you can still compile your applications and get them ready for testing on your Surface Book. But when you want to put it on a physical device in a full debug session with all of your actual app stuff, when you're not using the Xamarin Live Player, or you want to put it on a remote simulator, you want to be connected to the Mac. So I'm going to hit debug here. And when I do this, it's going to go ahead and launch a remote iOS simulator for Windows. And this is really powerful because it's going to give you all the functionality of an iOS simulator that was previously just on a Mac right here on my actual Surface Book. There we go. So again, this is just talking over the network. So I never, like my Mac is just supplying some Wi-Fi in that communication bridge. So here I have that same exact view, which you can tell I'm an Android designer developer and not an iOS designer and developer, but you get the point. So I'm going to hit search. I'm going to hit those same breakpoints that I just hit over there in Android. So I'm going to go ahead and just go ahead and remove those there. So if I'm debugging this application, we get that same exact effect. Since it's a touch screen, I'm just going to go and just interact and scroll up with my touch screen because, you know, why wouldn't you want to use a touch screen when you have a touch screen? So we forward all of the touch events back to it. So we improve even the simulator experience. So if I go in, I say Panda now, and I hit search, it's going to fade out, fade back in, and we're getting those nice native animations. But again, getting the nice collection view, the recycler view, the native animations on each of the platforms. But I'm sharing a bulk of my logic. Cool. All right. I can tell everyone was impressed because they're like clapped and they were so excited. They're like, well, I can write .NET everywhere. To me, what's cool about that is multiple things. I never left Visual Studio. All the C# and .NET that I knew and love, including libraries that I've been using for years, like HTTP client and JSON.NET, they just work. We did all that hard work so you can just leverage it. Let's talk about code sharing, some things we're doing to make it even easier to share more code. When we want to share code, I like to use a few different sharing approaches. The standard way that developers have done it for a while is called portable class libraries. It's a way of taking and saying there's a whole bunch of things that support .NET, and what is the common elements between them. Now, this is the older way of doing it because it's being replaced by .NET standard libraries. .NET standard libraries are going to be a single API that easily are consumed against any .NET application, whether it's desktop, Linux machines, .NET Core, iPhones, Android devices, ASP.NET websites, anywhere. You create one library, one DLL, that you can ship across anywhere inside your company or externally to NuGet. And you just consume it everywhere. So .NET standard libraries are the future. So if you're saying, James, where do I get started today? Take a look at some .NET standard stuff. You can use NuGet packages in either IDE and Visual Studio, so you can ship them, you can consume them, and be good to go. Now, you saw me use this thing called a shared project, and it was that double diamond green thing, and you're like, James, what the heck is that thing? I've never used that thing. And shared projects are like my favorite way of actually sharing code when I only want to share code with this application and these projects. So shared projects do not generate an assembly. It's essentially glorified file linking. It says every single file that is in that shared project, just go ahead and automatically add it to Android, iOS, or your Windows projects. So it's a great way of sharing code with having to worry about what DLLs are going where, what references, and all this stuff, because it's just shared libraries. And one thing that's unique here is that since it's just file linking, you can do conditional compilation. So you can do a pound if on Android and write some Android code, and then pound iOS and do some iOS stuff. This is great when you're using some libraries that maybe don't have a super nice cross-platform API, and you need to integrate with them or do something a little bit different on iOS or on Android. So I love shared projects. Now, no matter how you shared code, you're going to get great shared code sharing with Xamarin across any of your applications. These are a few two different applications. One by my good friend Frank Krueger, who I do a podcast with called iCircuit. And it's a very complex circuit simulator. He's an electrical engineer by trade. And in the blue there, the bluish green, you're seeing the shared code percentage across iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac. And he's sharing anywhere between 70 all the way up to 90% of code across those different platforms. Now, that gray bit is the platform-specific stuff. So things of integrating into the user interface or animations or some of the native APIs. So he's an iOS guy, so he really likes the iOS bits and pieces. So on iOS, he's integrating with iCloud and some of the extensions, so that's why there's a little bit less shared code. But if he finds a bug in the core engine, his models, vmodels, he fixes it in one place, and it trickles down all the different platforms. And TouchDraw is a very complex Visio-type drawing application, and again, sharing anywhere between 75% of code to 61% on the different platforms. And on average, even me, our average developer shares about 70% of code with the Xamarin native approach. But we wanted to simplify development for developers, because when I talk about this shared code, that is that .NET logic. But sometimes you need to reach into that stuff up there. You just got to get up there. And that stuff is the platform-specific code. So interacting with the UI, but also when you want to integrate with those awesome APIs that you have 100% access to. So when you want to access battery stats or GPS or lights or notification or text-to-speech, you have access to all that in C#. Now, what we realized over the years of doing development with Xamarin is that a lot of these platforms do the exact same thing. They all do geolocation, they all do text-to-speech, they all do settings. Sometimes they're very unique in some of the functionality, but about 80% of the functionality is available on each platform. So we said, hey, right now you have access to all of them, so you can go learn about each of them and implement it three times. But we said, what if you didn't, A, have to write any of that code? Like, what if you just wanted to access geolocation or text-to-speech and didn't have to write the code to do it for each platform? And what if you could access text-to-speech or any other functionality from your shared code? For instance, I want to use text-to-speech. So my API should be in my .NET library, and I just say speak. Now, .NET doesn't have a text-to-speech API. iOS, Android, and Windows does. So when I call speak, I want it to still reach into the native code on each platform. So we did that. We call them plugins for Xamarin and Windows. We've abstracted all common APIs across iOS, Android, Mac, tvOS, and Windows into a common single API that you can access in your shared code, whether it's PCL, .NET Standard, or shared libraries. My big initiative that I started 2 years ago, and we have hundreds of them available. So let me show you what that looks like. So let's say I want to do a few things here in my shared code. Let's say I want to, I don't know, pop up some dialog boxes or check for connectivity, or even maybe, take some pictures and upload some photos somewhere. So the first thing that I want to do is come in into here, and I'm going to go to xamarin.com/plugins. That's kind of a hot page that I can go to and learn about plugins, how it'll accelerate my development, and then I can browse the plugins here. And what this is going to do is take you into our GitHub repository for all of our components. So these are our open source libraries for like Facebook and Firebase and Google Play, and you can read about them here. And then you have these community-provided open-source plugins. Things like Bluetooth LE, calendar, compass, connectivity, device info, embedded resources, fingerprint, geofencing, in-app billing. That's an awesome one, because I was sick and tired of writing in-app billing so many times, so I wrote a plugin. This is my favorite one. I'm just going to show it. So here we go. So when you go in, you're like, man, I just really want to do some in-app billing, like subscriptions or get rid of ads. Wouldn't it just be amazing if my API was just, I don't know, purchase async? Like, that's your API. Like, it's crazy. From my shared code. So let me show you what this looks like, right? So I want to do a few things. The first thing here is I want to check connectivity, see if I'm online or I'm offline. So I'm going to go here, and connectivity seems like generated by someone that's, that does a lot of code and has a good name. So there's a connectivity plug. And I always like to, you know, investigate the library creators. So open that up, and pretty cute. So that's good. Lots of code commits. That's positive. And if I look at this, you can see all of the active developments going on. My connectivity plugin supports all of these different libraries, all of them, tvOS, Android, Silverlight, all of them. So you can say, am I connected? Connection types, bandwidth, can I ping a URL? Connectivity changes, you know, can I get access to that? So you can just use a little connectivity thing here. So what happens here is that all the code is available. So even though I've put it into a cross-platform API, you can come look at my Android implementation. So as I scroll down, this is all of the Android code that I wrote, so you don't have to write it. And I did this on every single platform, so you never have to do it, because that'd be silly, because I just want to say, is connected. Like, why do I have to go learn all this stuff? Like, here, it's here. But if you want to see how it's made, definitely come check it out. So hundreds and hundreds upon lines of code. I also want to do something inside of here, like use some cognitive services. So I'm going to go to microsoft.com/cognitive-services, which are all these amazing cross-platform APIs to do like facial recognition and things like that. So it'd be cool if I could tap on a photo and like look at a happiness level and maybe pop up a dialog box or maybe even take a photo of my face. So I'm going to bring in cognitive services. And to take a photo, I'm going to use this media plugin, again, created by somebody. He seems super active. And then I want to pop up dialogues. So we're going to use Alan Ritchie. Yes, we're not only going to use my plugins. We're going to use Alan Ritchie's user dialogues to do message boxes cross-platform. This NuGet is awesome. It does action sheets, alerts, confirmations, toasts, time. It's a whole bunch of stuff. So here's what I'm going to do. In my solution, I'm going to say manage NuGet libraries. And you would just find these and install them. So here I've installed them into all of my projects. So you don't just install it into your shared code. You install it into every single platform, because that's where the platform-specific stuff lives. So I have a permissions plugin here. I have a connectivity plugin, a geolocator plugin, a media plugin. And I've installed all those NuGets ahead of time. So inside of my shared code, I'm in that search. Let's just say if string.isNull or whitespace, if someone passes in query, I'll say var, or I'll say return false. There we go. And I'll say user dialogues. So up top here, I've added a few using statements. Connectivity, dialogues, and media. So I brought in a few plugins. User dialogues dot instance dot alert async. I'm going to say, please search for cute things. There we go. And this is asynchronous, so we'll go ahead and await on it to finish. All right, one line of code to pop up a dialogue natively on each platform. I'll say if I'm not cross-connectivity.current is the API, dot is connected. One line of code to check connectivity. Again, I'll use this dialog box to return false. I'll say no interwebs. Don't give dialog user boxes like that. That's terrible, but it's fun. So one line of code to check connectivity, and again, to pop up dialog boxes. And again, let's just put some down here. Will at least be something went terribly wrong. Please open a ticket with support. They're never going to open a ticket with support. Cool. So a few lines of code into my shared code to do that. The next thing I want to do is I've written a few lines of code in my shared project to tap into the cognitive services that are in here. So I want to pass it a photo, or maybe take a photo of someone in the crowd or myself with my camera. So what I'll do inside of here is I'm going to use this emotion service client. So I think of the emotion service as a huge plugin that I can use. So here I'm just going to go and pass it a stream, and it'll go ahead and take my key and then recognize faces, and then down here I will analyze the happiness level and return a happy or sad frowny face. So literally just a few lines of code in my shared code to detect faces on an image. So here I'm going to either do one of two things. First, maybe tap on an image to see if it's happy or not. I use HTTP client to grab a stream asynchronously and pass it into it. And I use that dialog box to open the results. Down here, though, I'm going to use my media picker to actually take a photo of my face or pick a photo from my gallery. So I want to be more than just an image search app. So down here, I'm going to use crossmedia.initialize, make sure that the cameras are ready. And I'm going to use this API, take photo async. With one line of code, I get to specify the directory the image is saved to, the name of the file, and the photo size. You can have it resized to small, medium, large, or you can specify max width or height. It'll automatically take care of all the native bitmaps and save it into my application automatically. One line of code. And then, if I just want to pick a photo, though, I'll just say, pick a photo. And when that's done, I'm going to take that image, that file, and then there's a two stream. That just happened to be coincidence, because I already exposed that in the API. So I'm going to say get stream and pass it to the emotion engine and then pop up that dialog box. All in my shared code, I'm accessing connectivity, dialog boxes, my image pickers, and being able to take photos. So what I'm going to do now is go back into my Android application and set that as my startup. All I have to do now is do one more line of code to integrate down here and actually give them a way of my users to take a photo or tap on a specific image. So whenever they tap on an image, I'll analyze that photo. Or if they want to actually take a photo, I'm going to do a little button on the UI. So I'm going to go down here and say, set up camera. Let's go ahead and do that after I set up there. So now I'm going to go ahead and redeploy here. So I've just updated a few lines of my code, but almost everything is being done here and deploying it to my actual Nexus here. Now what I'm going to do over here is I'm going to go into my view controller, into my shared code, image search view model, my view model, I mean. And I'm going to go ahead and add a few breakpoints. So let's go ahead and add a breakpoint here and add a breakpoint here. And I'm going to say search for nothing. And I hit a breakpoint. We can see that my query is empty. So if I go ahead and step down, I'm going to go ahead and now pop up a dialog box. Boom. Native Android design to pull it up. But I could search for a monkey. It'll continue on. We actually have a search query. We'll go ahead and get rid of that. It'll continue on. Now we can go ahead and search for some monkeys and pull them back. There we go. But now you're like, all right, well, now I want to search for pandas. But I'm at a conference, so I probably don't have any internet. So now I'm in airplane mode offline, and I hit search. And just like that, the connectivity plugin kicks into effect. It's been notified that I'm offline, and now I can go ahead and tell them that I'm offline. I'm going to go ahead and continue on. I'm offline over here. There's no interwebs. I'll tap on it. Here's what's cool. I'll take it out of airplane mode. We're going to go ahead and wait for it to reconnect to the interwebs. Connected. Search again. Immediately now, I'm notified that I do have internet. Go ahead and go back. And now I'm searching over here for pandas. Super cool. Now what's great, though, is I can come in and, is this panda happy? I'm going to tap on it. And let's see. I'm going to go ahead and see if it is. Do it. There we go. Unable to analyze image because it's not a human face. It's a panda face. So let's search for Miguel de Icaza. I was just searching for Scott Gu. Scott. That's always a good thing to do. I don't look so happy. So I'm going to tap on him. 9% happy. He looks real happy. A little bit happier. 100% happy. That's good. I don't know about this Azure one. He's like, I don't know what's going on in the cloud. Can't find him. He's real happy. I like that's a good Scott Gu. 99.98 happy. Now let's see if I can beat Scott Gu or at least match his happiness level. So I'm going to go ahead and tap on that little image button down there. And here we go. There's me. And I'm just going to go ahead and take my face and it's a little bit weird lighting up. Here we go. This is me in the morning. Very not happy. So I take that photo, and I'm going to hit a breakpoint here, and I put it here so you can see the file that gets picked. It's stored locally in my Android data, and I can look at all the different attributes that are associated with it. I'm going to continue on, and I'm 0.02% happy. That is pre-coffee. Post-coffee, let's see if it finds multiple face boxes on it, though. So it takes a photo, and we'll go ahead and get rid of that. 98.44, a little smirky. Pretty cool. What's great here is everything is inside of my shared code. When I set it again on my iOS project, and I set it to the iPhone simulator, and I hit go, what's awesome here is that all of those code changes that I have from my shared code, well, it's not going to work because I didn't add that one line of code. Let's go ahead and stop debugging. There we go. I can come into my view controller. There we go. And I'm going to say set up camera. There we go. Now redeploy. Set up camera is going to just do a few things. It's just going to add a button so I can take a photo. So let's go ahead and get rid of that. There we go. Cool. So to go ahead and relaunch. And all of that connectivity stuff, all the user dialogues will work still. So if I come over here, and I come in, and I go ahead and empty this out, and I hit search, we're going to see same thing, but native iOS. If I come up to this little picker, I'm going to come in. You know I have some photos of Miguel in there, or me. I'm going to just go ahead and tap on my face. I'm going to go out, take that photo, analyze it, and I get the same dialogues back, all from my shared code. It's bananas. It's awesome. We want to enable you to be super productive. I love plugins. It's my passion. And I'm glad that everyone applauded because they are like my favorite thing in the world. Cool. Let's talk a little bit more. Let's go through and talk about cross-platform user interface in the last few minutes I have. I'm not going to go into a demo of Xamarin Forms. There's going to be some other demos later, but I want to give you the basics of when and how and why you'd want to use it. And I know I stand between you and 3 minutes until you can eat lunch. So Xamarin Forms is great because you're not always building the super crazy, highly optimized app that I need, you know, sub 1 second startup time, and I just want to build some XAML code and go. So Xamarin Forms takes this approach to Xamarin native development and builds a shared user interface and additional business logic layer on top of it, same shared backend. It gives you a bunch of pages, two-way data binding, navigation, animation, a dependency service, and messaging center. It's not just user interface, it's an entire MVVM framework for your applications. So it gives you some pages, like master detail, navigation, tabbed, some layouts, like absolute, relative, or grid layout, so you can compose your actual user interface. And then there are the controls. So most of these will look familiar, but some of them will be different because they're mobile Xamarin Forms controls. So we have an editor, and a label, and an image, and a picker, things that are common across every single platform. There's obviously very drastic differences between iOS, Android, and UWP, so we give you what's common. You can always create your own custom controls, though, and there's amazing vendors and content creators that are doing that, not only in the open source community, but amazing companies like Syncfusion, Telerik, DevExpress, Infragisics. So if you want a data grid, they got your data grids. If you want crazy image pickers and swipers and all that stuff, they got it for you. You want charts and graphs, they got it. Not only for Xamarin, but for Xamarin Forms. So as a code sample slide, this is what a login page, maybe inside of a tabbed controller, would look like. Follow me, camera guy. This is the one point where I like to just kind of come down the crowd. So what I have here is an iOS device, an Android device, and a Windows device. And I'm sorry for the right side of the room, but you can imagine that there's two of me and I'm doing the same thing. What I have here is a tabbed page. And that represents a tabbed page in Xamarin Forms XAML. All right? Inside of it is I have two content pages, one with a bunch of controls and then another one here that's blank, but that's my settings. I give them icons and a title. Inside of it here, I have a stack layout. I'm just going to stack some elements. And then I have some data binding to username. I have a button here that has some colors and some text colors and a login command. Looks familiar if you've ever done XAML. How many of you have done XAML development before? Looks very similar. If you haven't, you're going to love it because XAML is amazing. It's phenomenal. So what this is doing, though, is when this gets run, it's not drawing anything. It's not putting it in a web browser. It's not doing anything like that. What Xamarin Forms does is it lays down in the native controls. It handles the layout, the orientation, the placement, and the interaction with the controls. So that's why you have a UI tab view controller on iOS with native controls. You have Material Design on Android with Material Tabs, and a UWP application that can be run absolutely everywhere because it's a UWP application. You can put these on phones, on tablets, on TVs, anything that you want to do. They're still native applications. That's super important, that Xamarin Forms is still giving you the native controls. So when is it good and when isn't good? Well, there's a session later, I think today or tomorrow, with Nick Landry. He's going to give you some real-world examples. Xamarin Native, what I showed you first, is giving you a one-to-one mapping. Native startup times, native performance, every single bit of native user interface controls there. So if you want that super highly optimized app, that's the way to go. If you're looking for an application that fits into the Xamarin Forms ecosystem, the controls that are available, and you're okay with a second or two startup time or something like that, because again, it's a big framework. You're like, you know what? I just love this. I want to go out and do it. That's where Xamarin Forms shines. I built the Xamarin Evolve conference application in it. You can download it from the app stores today, and that's a beautiful example of what you can do. It's very complex. But both of them are great. It's based on your application that's there getting started. So I'll run through really quick some build announcements that were set up. So some other things as a takeaway that you may not go and learn about if you didn't watch the video, and then I'll get you guys out of here. We want to improve installation, first run, and the debugging process. We made it super easy to bring in third-party APIs. We've had these things called bindings where you can go find an Objective-C or Java library and pull them into your iOS or Android application, and it'll bind it in C#. We expose that same exact technology. We've added new templates into Visual Studio to optimize that for you, including a CocoaPod importer. But we have a brand new automation tool called Swift Netitizer, or Swift Netifier. I don't know, we have some ridiculous, amazing names. It'll take a Swift API and turn it into a .NET API automatically for you. I showed you the extensions earlier. We optimize extensions for Mac and iOS, so as you start to build out your Xamarin or Xamarin Forms application, they're there ready. We have this brand new multi-process debugging that I showed you earlier. This is important because as you're building out even an iOS application, you may have a custom keyboard, a file picker. You can not only debug your .NET Core backends and your iOS app, but also your extensions or background services at the same time. This is super important because iOS applications are multiple apps inside of one. So what we used to do last year is we used to ship your app and each extension with our own Xamarin runtime. That was okay when you had one or two extensions, but when you had 10 or 20 extensions, it started to grow your app size really big. Now, we do have an advanced linker and optimizer that really shrinks that runtime very small, just a meg or two or three. But what we did this year is we now integrate and we have one shared Xamarin runtime across all of your extensions in an iOS application, greatly reducing the size, whether you're doing an Apple Watch application, extensions, or an Apple TV application. It's awesome. We've integrated Fastlane integration to go from zero to getting it provisioned on a machine. This is important. Has anyone done iOS and have to worry about provisioning profiles? It's terrible. It's the worst part of iOS development, I swear. So we simplified it. In VS for Mac, you can simply go in, log in with your Apple account. It'll find your team. It'll automatically register your Mac device as a development machine and create the signing identity. It will then create a provisioning profile, register your device ID with Apple. Then it will register your device that you have plugged into your Mac, and then add that device to the provisioning profile. Within 1 minute, you'll get all of your entitlements, register your device with the Apple portal, right from Visual Studio. You never have to go to the Apple portal. It's awesome. Yeah. If you watch my build session I do with Miguel, I demo this live. It's amazing. We've also brought ahead-of-time compilation to Mac and Android. This is awesome because we, for a long time, used JIP. We're bringing AOT and our advanced LLVM compiler to give you super highly optimized code. If you're saying, James, I want to do a bunch of jitting still, it's okay because we have a hybrid mode of running AOT code alongside JIT code. So we still have a JIT. It's still there. So you can do assembly.load file for your Android and Mac applications that still exist today. But it'll pre-compile, optimize, and obfuscate your AOT code, so you don't have to do anything like that. This is great because it improves our startup time, which was already even great. The last part here, it keeps going, I have so many slides, is the Xamarin Live Player. You saw me demo it earlier today. I want to take you through exactly what it does. You have code, file new, and I want to get started. It supports Xamarin Forms applications, but it also supports custom controls for iOS, iOS Xamarin Native applications, and Android custom controls. So this runs on both iOS and Android, no matter where your device is. These apps are in the App Store today. Now, all you do is you scan that QR code, and what that does is it essentially allows your devices to talk to Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac, and it will essentially share your local IP address and then communicate directly. Nothing else is talking over the network. Everything is a one-to-one, and you hit debug and you go. And again, it looks a little bit like this, but this is what it looks like in VS for Mac. You pair your device, whether it's iOS or Android. It's registered. You can have as many devices, iPhones, iPads, anything like that, and you hit debug. Now, what's cooler is that you can hit debug, or you can go into the live mode, which essentially is giving you a live edit and continue mode, which is going to essentially ship just the bit differences over to your iOS or Android device so you can modify it in real time. This is an amazing way to get up and running in just a few time because you don't need any SDKs or anything else installed. You can do it just on a PC or just on a Mac with any iOS or Android device. And this is all available today inside of the Visual Studio previews that are available, so 15.3 and Visual Studio for Mac preview. And the apps are available in the App Store. You can go to Xamarin.com/live to learn more. To get started with Xamarin, go to Xamarin.com. We have Xamarin University for great training, which is our live interactive training. And with that, I went way over time. Go eat lunch. Enjoy Dev Intersections. Thank you guys so much.